where the Twins play. WCCO.
1-2 delivery, swing, and a miss. He struck him out on a breaking pitch.
Heading into the playoffs, the division champion Twins close out the season against Cleveland. Listen for the call. Pregame starts tonight at 6:30.
Hey,
the flagship station for Twins baseball.
Come on.
830 WCCO.
32 minutes past the hour, 3 o'clock. You just heard Jeff McKinney with the closing numbers on Wall Street. Jeff, how do I sound as a sidekick?
You sound like you are harnessed. You sound like you're bursting at your harness, and you'd like to take over the show.
No, not take over the show. I've just got a million questions to ask Cannon, but I would never interrupt one of the great raconteurs of radio.
I interrupted him one time, and he screamed at me on the air.
Because you are...
Let's go,
You were the newsman, and you were not given the permission to the weather guy.
No, it was the traffic guy. I had the temerity to talk to the traffic guy. I think there was a terrible accident on a freeway here. 7 or 8 people had been killed, and Cannon screamed at me to quit talking about that because he had a story he wanted to tell about what he had done the night before.
He ran a tight ship.
Yes.
That's one of the hallmarks of that show.
Yes.
See? And then little did he know that many years later you would be unbridled and violating one of the chief rules that he enforced, and that was or was enforced by management upon
which was shut up.
Not only shut up, it was shut up about television. There are times when I talk to Jeff, Steve, I have to bring him away from the television set because he's watching some a woman get crowned Miss America, and he can't even have a conversation with me because he's watching the television and tells me that on the air.
Say, Jeff, you still reading books? You were one of the few people at this station that read a book.
Yes, I'm still reading books.
Oh, that's good.
I still read them occasionally, yes.
What have you read lately?
I read Waiting for Snow in Havana. Have you read that?
No.
I bet not.
No, who wrote that?
I don't know who wrote that. It's written by a man who is now a professor at the University of Pennsylvania who spent his childhood in pre-Castro Havana. And left as soon as Castro took power, but it's all about the hurly-burly leading up to Castro's taking of power. So it's quite interesting.
The best book, novel I've read, won the Pulitzer Prize a couple of years ago. It's called Middlesex.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a Greek family. Winds up in Detroit. There are a lot of Greek people there. It starts in Greece with the great-grandfathers and works up to the present time. An amazing book. That's all I've got to say. Could not put it down.
Yeah, I love stuff like that. Yeah.
Jeff and I are fond of Western literature, and I've always said that the best book that I had read, contemporary book that I'd ever read, was McMurtry's Lonesome Dove.
That was a good book. Yeah.
I loved it. Put it down.
It's a terrific book. And as I've told you on occasion, I loved reading that book with maps at hand because there was a very limited highway system, as you might imagine, in the West in those days. So,
except
for the rivers. And I would plot their progress by watching them cross river after river after river on my map, as described by McMurtry. Yes.
Appreciate it. Jeff McKinney on WCCO. It's about 24 minutes before the hour of 4 o'clock, and guess what the temperature is outside? I just found out.
I don't know.
44.
44?
44.
That's cool.
We thought 52 and 50 degrees. I think the people at home would want to know. We know that you've had phone contact with Chappie, and we're trying to get Chappie to call in here, Dick Chapman. But I'm wondering if you've had any, since you have been gone 7 years, have you had any contact with Morgan Mundane? Have you had any contact with Ma Linger or Backlash LaRue? Did you say goodbye to them when we dismantled the studio, or what happened?
I haven't seen Backlash or Ma very often, but Morgan and I are still close friends. As a matter of fact, I have been doing a little shot every Saturday morning with Charlie Boone.
Yeah,
and Danny Long at 10 minutes to 9.
Does he do that from a studio, or?
No, he does it on the phone.
On the phone.
Yep. And we've been doing that. Morg makes his predictions. We'll be on tomorrow morning early. We're usually on at 10 to 9, but the Twins play at 11 o'clock. So we're backed up.
Oh.
And so it'll be at 6:50 tomorrow. Big game for the Minnesota Gophers tomorrow. They're a 14.5 point choice over Penn State.
Explain that to the listeners, how that line is set, because that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to beat them by 14.5 points. It means that the people taking money have to set a line that makes sure that they get equal amount of money on both sides, don't they?
Well, that's what they're hoping for,
Yeah.
And then, well, we could talk forever about how the bookmakers make their money and the odds makers and the rest of it. Last week, Morgan had an error, which doesn't come very often. He said Minnesota would not cover the spot against Northwestern. They were favored in that game, 9.
Yeah.
Morgan said they would win by 8, and they won by a lot more than
that.
But this is a really good football team.
Yeah. Well, or has Morgan fallen off a little bit? Is he paying as much attention to the
lines? No, I think he just didn't believe the hype so far on the Gophers. And he thought that Northwestern would pose a big problem with their... they don't go in the huddle. They throw the ball a lot.
Yeah, I got a good offense.
You know, and last year, Minnesota didn't stop the pass. Let's face it. Michigan, game they were ahead, 28-7 going in the fourth quarter?
That's exactly right.
They started throwing those little dump-off passes to that great halfback, and he drove them crazy, and they lose the game. This seems to be a better team this year, though.
Sure seems like it.
Plus, they don't have to play Purdue or Ohio State this year. The game that'll decide things, I think they should beat Penn State. When they go to Michigan before 115,000 fans, and when they start playing that Hail to the Victor, and that team charges out.
Yeah, no matter what the score is.
Yeah. That Michigan team comes out of the, I want to say dugout, but out of the entryway.
The big tunnel,
And that crowd erupts. It's tough. I don't think Minnesota's won there since Ricky Foggy was here. That's the last time, and that was with Lou Holtz.
Right. And we have played that in our celebration of the 80th year of being on the air. We have played that highlight with Ray Christensen calling the game with Ricky at the helm. It's one of the great highlights of the entire 80-year history of WCCO.
That was a great game.
Did Moore call that game?
But,
you think he had that one right?
I can't remember.
Yeah.
He's had some great ones, though. The best scoop that Morgan ever had, let's go back to the 1980s. It's
okay.
20 minutes before 4. It's 44 degrees here at WCCO on the Don Shelby Show.
This is the Cannon Mess.
It is kind of a mess today. But in any...
With no commercials, how does that feel?
Yeah, I can't get used to it. When I was doing the show, he's writing a column now for the Minneapolis Tribune. Good guy.
Nick Coleman.
He wrote something, and I'm paraphrasing, years ago, that he drove to Mankato, going down to watch the Vikings work out, and he was listening to the Cannon Mess, and he said it was all commercials. And he said it was unlistenable. Hmm. I read the column on the air the next day, and I said that if I were Nick Coleman, I would have turned me off.
Really?
Yeah, with all those commercials. I didn't take umbrage at it. But in any event...
Was it true?
Was it true? There were a lot of commercials.
Yeah.
I don't think it was boring.
No. See,
but if it was boring to him, that's okay. That's his opinion.
I said yesterday one of the great marks of your genius on the air was the ability to make it sound like even the commercials were all personal stories of your own. And I did not notice. You would have to listen very carefully to think that there were a lot of commercials in the Cannon Mess, because everything you personalized... You did, in fact, personalize. They sounded like, and in fact, if Morgan comes in at any time in the next hour, I have a bone to pick with him, because there was a commercial that you were doing that Morgan actually interrupted that made me, when I first got to town 26 years ago, made me extremely angry. And I called the station to have Morgan talked to by
really?
Steve Cannon. Yes.
Oh, I don't remember. But...
Well, I don't know if you got the message, but I was terribly upset by all of that.
Well, I don't blame you.
But we'll talk to him if he comes in here later on.
So back in the 80s, the Gopher football team was in dire straits.
Yeah.
Smokey Joe Salem was the coach, and he had some tough luck, and they fired him. Same time, Paul Giel, athletic director at the time, had a heart attack.
Yeah, God bless him.
Great guy. And... they haven't got a coach. And people are wondering, what are they going to do? So Kurt Beckman, who was our news chief at that time, came in to me, and he said, pass this one by Morgan. He said, I just got a call from a friend of mine down in Arkansas at Fayetteville, and he said that he just drove Lou Holtz, the deposed coach of, at that time he was at Arkansas and he'd been fired.
Right.
Had a big fight with Frank Broyles, who was the athletic director. And he said, and Kurt said to me, my friend said that he's flying to Minneapolis. And he says, what do you think? So I thought, well, thanks. So I said to Morgan, what do you think? And Morgan said, probably coming up here and going to Rochester, to Mayo, for a, you know, a,
makes sense,
for the clinic. Or he's coming up here to make a speech. And I said, do you think there's any chance that he could be the next Gopher coach? And Morgan said, you know something? That may be it.
Huh.
And he said, I'm going to call a couple of my friends. So Morgan leaves the studio, comes back in, he says, it's a lock. Lou Holtz is going to be announced tomorrow as the new coach. I said, who'd you get it from? He said, just some of the people I work with, meaning the people he gambles with.
Exactly.
So I said, well, I don't know. He said, I'm going with it. So Morgan got on the air, and he said, the new coach is going to be Lou Holtz, who's a winner every day. Rejoice, Gopher fans.
Morgan breaks the story on 830.
He breaks it on 830.
Unbelievable.
The first one to come on with us is Sid. Sid Hartman.
Yes, I remember him.
Sid says, you know, the story, you know, about the Holtz coming in, that's BS. He's a close personal friend, and he's telling me first.
Right.
And so forth.
Yeah, yeah.
And Morgan told him, he says, Sid, say what you will, but you're beat on this story, and you'll be apologizing tomorrow. And Sid said, Morgan, you're crazy. You're crazy. Give it up. So we go on and talk. John Rowe was the reporter and covered the Gopher football team at that time. He's retired now. Good guy. And always called me Iron Man, the Iron Man from the Iron Range. So he calls me up. I put him on the air. What's up? He says, Iron Man, I just finished a nine-hour shift over here at the Tribune. My managing editor just said that he was listening to Morgan Mundane, that Lou Holtz is going to be the coach. Listen, I know, you know, this is a nice story, but just tell the truth. It's BS, isn't it? He says, because I want to go home, and I don't want to start checking this story. I'm tired. And I said, John, you do what you want to do. And Morgan got in there, too, and he says, John, you do what you want to do, but you're going to have egg on your face tomorrow if you write that this isn't true, okay? So anyhow, we go with it. The next day, they have a press conference at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and one of the announce that Lou Holtz is the new coach. So
did Moore get the credit in the newspapers?
No. But the president at that time was J. Peter McGraw.
Yes.
He called me up after that press conference. I put him on the air. He said, Steve, I don't know. You and Morgan are the greatest, especially Morgan. He said, nobody knew about it except Harry McKay knew.
Yeah.
And I don't know how, and I suppose they told Paul Giel. But there wasn't anybody in the media. Nobody had an idea about it. They kept it secret. He said, I picked up Lou Holtz. He said, I picked up Lou Holtz at the airport. We drove over to the mansion where he lived in on River Road. And he said, I'm listening to you. And you and Morgan are announcing. And Holtz is sitting next to me. And I almost drove into the river. He said, I can't believe it. So he said, I'll tell you what. I'm having a little party for him tonight. At the mansion, we'd like you and your wife to come, and Morgan, if he'd like to. You want to come, Morgan? Morgan says,
I don't go to none of them. I don't go to none of them swell parties.
Good invitation.
But he wouldn't go. You know, he just kind of put down J. Peter McGraw, and I apologized for him.
Did you and Nanook go?
Yeah, and you know what happened? We're out of time right now. I'll finish it later.
I'd like to hear it.
Cannon Mess, along with the man whose show you're listening to, Don Selby, CCO.
Jesus through the goalposts of life.
Ah, yes.
End over end, neither left nor to right.
And back in my sojourn on the Cannon Mess for 26 years, we played this song every Friday when Morgan made his picks, you know. Drop, kick me, Jesus, to the goalposts of life. Isn't that a great, great feeling there?
Yeah, it's a prayer, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It sure is. A prayer. All right, now you were telling the story, and Morgan had correctly identified Lou Holtz as being the next coach of the Minnesota Golden Gophers. Holtz, in a car with the president of the university, J. Peter McGraw, heard this, nearly drove into the river. and said, you and Nanook come over, bring Morgan. Morgan said he couldn't come.
Wouldn't come.
But then you and your wife were invited. So what happened next?
Well, it was snowing that night.
Okay.
And my wife really dressed up with the nylons and the high heels and a kind of a summer frock, even though it was winter, or it was late fall. And I had on a suit, which I normally don't wear, and it's just nice Oxfords and everything. I slid in the ditch on River Road. It was so slippery. And I couldn't get out. I couldn't get the car out. And we're maybe three blocks away. So I said, you sit here. I'm going to walk up Creighton. There was a Standard Oil station up there about six blocks up Creighton. So I almost run up there because I figure we're missing the cocktail hour.
Yeah.
And I get the wrecker. We come back. He pulls us out. When we get there, everybody's sitting down and eating. So we missed that. But we were at Holtz's table. He's so amusing, man. He is something.
We can't tell a story, can we?
So we had a great night. So Morgan had one of the greatest breaks in sports history on this radio station with naysayers like Sid Hartman, who's usually getting the breaks.
Yeah.
John Rowe and others. Nobody else in the media had that story but us, and that was Morgan.
I can't believe that a legitimate reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper like the Star Tribune, and John Rowe being a great reporter himself, would call the person on radio and ask, is it true what Morgan is saying?
Well, see, he knew Morgan.
Yeah.
And,
they didn't gamble together, did they?
No.
Okay.
No, but, you know, Morgan was given to hyperbole at times, you know. And Morgan had made predictions that hadn't come true.
Yeah, and he was sure of himself almost every time.
Oh, every time he makes a prediction, that's the way it is. It's a lock.
Yeah.
Right? Morgan had told me on the phone today, a friend of his called him up and said he's in a pool in the office, and hey, he had to have three winners with the pros this week. Morgan gave him the Packers over the Giants. He gave him Jacksonville to lose at home to
Indianapolis.
And the other one was to take the Rams. I believe it's the Rams at San Francisco. San Francisco, Morgan said, will have a hard time winning any games this season.
Mm-hmm.
But in any event, why don't I, when we go to the news on the hour, I'll give Morgan a call. You know, he's been evicted from his old apartment over at the Fairmont Hotel.
Really?
Over at 9th, right off of Hennepin, you know. They're tearing down the Fairmont Hotel. They're going to make it in a boutique hotel. Very expensive. Did you know that?
I had not heard that.
Yep.
Is that another breaking story?
No, no. This is about a year ago.
Okay.
You know, they had a big story in the Tribune at the time because a lot of people sent it out to me because knowing Morgan lived there. Morgan's living on Richfield now.
Really?
Yep.
Not that there's anything wrong, single family residence and just a regular row house like that?
No, he's living with a buddy of his.
Oh.
You know, and but he doesn't drive, so it's tough.
Oh, I know that.
Somebody's got to give him a lift downtown all the time and so forth, wherever he wants to go. So his life has been kind of half ruined by them evicting him out of the Fairmont Hotel. But anyway, that's the story.
That's a terrible story.
It is. It's kind of sad.
So at the news break, we'll see if we can get a hold of him.
Okay.
Okay. In the meantime, our friend and yours, Dick Chapman, has reached us by telephone, and you have not talked to him since he was 20 minutes away from your house in Florida.
That's right.
Promising to be right there. He was going to be right there, and you went out to meet him. Chappie, what happened to you?
Well, I got shanghaied by three young ladies.
Oh, Chappie.
Well, they
You're
were
dreaming.
They were members of that Pirates of Penzance things down there, you know, and they conned me into going somewhere, and I got in all kinds of trouble.
Well, okay.
Could you have called? I mean, like a day later?
Well, I couldn't find my cell phone. They got my wallet, they got my cell phone, they got everything.
Oh, I see. Well, that's a sad story, Chappie. How are you?
Not too bad. They tell me you're in your old basement studio.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in the basement studio. I'd never seen it before because they had to reassemble it. They had taken it apart.
Yeah.
I thought it was the Pavick Museum, but they just told me it was the Smithsonian that it was going to.
Is the Lush wandering around out there looking down the window?
Say it again, Chap.
The Lush. Is he looking in the window?
Mike Lunch?
Lunch.
The Lush.
Oh, the Lush, no.
You know, from the Lush joint.
No. I got, you know, this stuff's so in group, we got to tell. There is a bar that's in the building, in the first floor of this building, the Kelly's. WCCO building. Kelly's.
Yeah.
It used to be called the Court Bar.
It was the Court Bar, and it was a great hangout for CCO radio people. It's now, it's not anymore, because it's more for everybody, and it's kind of for young people who get out of work and want to have a little sip and something nice to eat. But the Lush joint was something else. It really was in the old days. It wasn't a champion. You spent some time in there, my boy.
I was in there. You know, it used to be at 5 o'clock. It was a real gathering place. And all the lawyers and the judges and what have you from across the street would come over there. And I was, so help me, I was in there one time, and a cop comes through the front door and yells, "Is there a judge in the house?" Five guys lifted their hand up, and this cop wanted a warrant to search somebody. And he signed it right there in the court bar.
Did you manage to get a tip or two inside the bar?
Yeah, that's where all the information was.
That was your beat, as I understand.
I never went through the front door.
They did have a back entrance that went straight from WCCO right into the court bar.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. Fritz Mondale was down there this morning, right?
Yeah.
One time when he was vice president, he was on our air in the big studio in there. And the FBI, the Secret Service, went through there the night before and got everything checked out. And they put a big plastic cover over the window, kind of like a target. And then they wouldn't let anybody go up and down the elevator. Well, I got off work, and Fritz is in there on the air. And I thought, well, I don't have to go out the elevator. I went down the back steps and out through the court bar. I'd parked in the alley behind the building back there, right? I pull out just as Fritz is pulling out the front. I look in the back of my car, and there's an uncovered shotgun laying there. I had just come from a hunting trip.
Uh-oh.
I forgot all about it. I'm about 40 yards from Fritz's limousine with this bare gun in the back of my car.
Not good.
Oh, man, I just stopped. And
have you got? Are you talking on a cell phone? We're getting some disturbance here.
No, I'm on a, a
walk-around phone.
Yeah. Oh.
Listen, Chappie, do me a favor.
Yeah.
You've got Cannon's number.
Yeah.
You need to call him and patch up this problem that developed all these years ago.
I am sorry about that. I was trying to get both he and biking together that day, and I screwed up everything.
That's well, okay, Dick.
Chappie, it's good talking to you.
You bet.
Sounds like it.
Have a great time.
Same to you.
On WCCO 830, this is the Cannon Mess. I'm Don Shelby, the sidekick to Steve Cannon, who after 7 years is back with us here on 830, the good neighbor of the Northwest. 27 states and 5 Canadian provinces, and Cannon, you're one of the reasons this has been a heck of a run for 80 straight years on WCCO.
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you very much for being here. And we've got a little bit of news to come up here from CBS and from WCCO. And we've also got another hour with Steve Cannon, commercial free on our 80th anniversary here on WCCO 830 Live and Local.